Vodka O'Clock.
Hello, everyone. It is Amber Love from AmberUnmasked.com. And joining me today on Vodka O'Clock is Mario Candelaria. And just to remind you that we are labeled as an explicit podcast and website, but, you know, please do go and enjoy AmberUnmasked.com if you're over 18. So Mario and I, you know, sort of, it actually wasn't Twitter that brought us together, which is kind of weird because that's usually how all of my podcasts start. It's usually somebody I know from Twitter, but it was Kickstarter. And so you're part of the team behind a comic book called Ashes that's running a Kickstarter. And we've also got other cool things to talk about, like your work as a stand-up comedian and as a blogger.
Yes.
So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about comics first, comic books, because it's confusing when I type comics into my search engine. Sometimes it brings up comedians, and that's not what I mean. Google is AI. It should know by now. But how did you get into comic books?
Well, I've always been reading comic books. I grew up reading them in Brooklyn. I think Spider-Man was one of my first ones. And it was just something that stuck with me ever since.
And was it the kind of experience where you went to a comic book store, or was it like off the spinner rack and the, you know, CVS or something?
You know, I believe it was the bodega down the street from me had a bunch of them in the spinner racks. But I think I think I really got them from my cousins. That's like 25 years ago now since I've been reading comics, so it's kind of hard to really remember where exactly I got to start.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the drug that people are okay with passing along, is getting each other hooked on that stuff. And we hear it a lot, like, you know, oh, I found a bunch of comics in my uncle's attic, or my brother handed them to me. And it was cool. I mean, back then I didn't read the superhero stuff, but we had stuff like Bugs Bunny comics. And
Bugs Bunny such?
Bugs Bunny and Richie Rich and... you know, back at the corner drugstore, I think we got ours. But what is it about Spider-Man that you liked?
Well, let's see.
You still like him? I mean, or
oh,
is it
yeah,
just over?
Definitely. I've been reading Spider-Man nonstop since 2000, I believe. But back then, what got into me was probably just Spider-Man. I mean, I guess he had his own cartoon. I didn't really know the details of what made him him until much later. But it was just something cool, you know, a cartoon character that I've seen around, toys and so on. But once I started to be able to actually read the balloons and get the story, I had a much deeper connection with it after that.
Well, I can relate to that because Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends was one of my favorite things ever, and I cosplay as Firestar, so.
Nice.
But yeah, it's definitely the sort of character that's become truly iconic. He's had a lot of programs, like a lot of cartoon programs, and obviously the movie franchises are huge.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you like the reboot of The Amazing Spider-Man that in the movies?
Yeah, I've been asked this a couple times, and I enjoyed it, but I'm also a very easygoing guy who enjoys pretty much anything I'll go to the theater and see.
Yeah, I mean, I actually liked the Green Lantern movie, but I'm like one of two people that did.
I saw it in 3D, and I liked that. I saw it again on HBO the other day, and I was like, wow, this is boring.
Oh, okay.
But no, I'm pretty much like a dog. I just like to get out the house. As long as I'm outside, I'm happy.
Yeah, I thought that the movies were, they stood on their own enough that it was, I mean, it's natural to compare it to the Sam Raimi stuff, but it wasn't necessary. I mean, I was just kind of like, oh, gee, another origin story. But it was a fun story.
It felt kind of like it was trying to emulate The Dark Knight a little bit, didn't it?
Very much. Oh, yeah. It was, oh, we got to be darker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the Harry Potters got progressively darker, but the books actually do that. I dropped Spider-Man from my pull list.
Really?
A long time ago. So I actually have no idea how, you know, and I love Dan Slott. He's such a great guy, and I feel bad that I don't read his book, but back like that whole Brand New Day, One More Day stuff, when all that was happening, I was like, you know what, I can't deal with this. This book is really disappointing me, and I dropped it.
I felt like I started to get into it more when that happened, just because it was coming out almost weekly, like a TV show.
But that was it. It was really hard to keep up with if you have a specific budget. And,
oh, yeah.
It was just too much. And then the fact that they reset so many things, it was just, you know, it's not that I minded that he had web shooters or whatever, because I remember him having web shooters from the cartoons. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It was one of those things where it was hard to separate from the drama that was going on with the creator end of it, with Marvel. And people ask that question a lot. I don't know if you've weighed an opinion or thought about it at all. Like, if you can separate your enjoyment or lack of enjoyment of a product based on whether or not you've liked the person who made it, like, you know, the Orson Scott Card debacle over at DC, mm-hmm. you know, because he's just such a raging homophobe.
Yes, he is.
And the thing is, like, you know, I know other people that were working on that title, and it was really upsetting them when I would make the announcement, like, hey, our shop will get this for you if you order it, but we're not going to carry it. Because they felt that they were being punished. And they're like, you know, why would you do that? You know, there's people in corporations all over America that are homophobes. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yeah, but not all of them are actual lobbyists.
No, I kind of I ignore that type of stuff. I like to enjoy a product for what it is. I mean, I don't really like Tom Cruise's personal views too much in Scientology and all that, but I still enjoyed Oblivion this weekend.
Yeah, I think he's a really good actor. So, I mean, at least in the things that I've seen, I have not seen a lot of his work.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed, you know, Minority Report. I saw the first Mission Impossible. I've been meaning to watch all of them because I really did enjoy the first one. But yeah, that's a perfect example of, you know, dude, you might be completely off your rocker, but, you know.
Like I said, I'm easygoing, but I mean, I see the stuff. I'm part of the community where I see what's going on and what people are saying, but I try to remain objective and keep out of all that. I mean, I say some pretty off-color things too in my comedy. I don't really mean it, but who's to say someone's not going to take it out of context and turn it all against me?
Well, yeah, because you could end up, you know, with a backlash like Tosh, you know.
Oh,
and that just, you know, and it's one of those things where it was a soundbite, and it was wrong of him to say the things he says, but that his entire routine is saying incorrect things.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a big fan of his before, so I was just like, dude, man, you just should not have said that. Rape jokes are never good. They're just never, ever, ever good. They're never funny.
I think I made a sort of rape joke today, actually. I know you say it's not funny, but I kind of made one today. On my computer, I had a constant alert, you know, like it was updated and reboot now.
Okay.
So I said, wow, the updater button, this pop-up is kind of like the date rapist of the digital world, where it just will not go away until you give in.
Oh.
See? Kind of not funny, but...
But other people would be okay with that. And you know, and it's sort of the thing where in the, you know, there's rape culture and then there's people who deny rape culture even exists.
Yeah.
That the word has become so, it lost its meaning because it's become such a pop culture word now. And it's, you know, in every video game, there's the players. I mean, I don't necessarily mean it's part of the games, but it's just completely watered down the impact of what kind of a crime that is. And
what the multiplayer people are saying?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's a whole other topic. I don't even want to get into that.
Yeah, they're brutal. And yeah.
I try to stay away from Xbox Live, like playing against anyone else. I just stick to my single player games because what they say is just so out there. sometimes.
Yeah, and you can't, you know, and you can't even like say, oh, it's just some, you know, 14-year-old douchebag, because it's not. I mean, these are people who know better. But I don't, you know, when it comes to your stand-up comedy, though, have you had any kind of big faux pas and backlash or anything that you've apologized for?
Well, when I first started, my mentor, Rick Crom, told me always stay away from things like, you know, incest or child molestation or rape jokes, because you never know if someone in the crowd is experienced that. Even though, let's say, 99% of people will laugh at the joke, that one person will feel like you're singling them out. So, as you're saying, you know, the culture's watered down, but we try to stay away from things like that. There are some people who can do it. Like, my friend Rady does a joke. I don't want to mess up his routine, but he wonders how long he'll last in prison before he starts raping guys.
Okay.
But he kind of flips it. But I try, you know, like we were told to stay away from things like that, that can, like, single out an individual. AIDS jokes, rape jokes, things like that.
Yeah, because I think unless you're going to be that guy, you know, like Tosh, I don't think anybody can get away with it. You know, if it's like all of a sudden smack in the middle of your otherwise, you know, funny routine, I think it would become a soundbite.
No, I shouldn't just make fun of myself when I'm up there.
That's actually like the best advice that, you know, Chris Hardwick, I think, said, and I think he actually said that he got the advice from somebody else, was, you know, instead of taking on subjects like that, always turn it on yourself, because just self-deprecation and pointing out, you know, what a loser you are, and, you know, how fat you are, and how Jewish you are, and, you know, whatever it is, people then see you as you, the human being, and can laugh with you, because you're laughing at yourself. And I think that is a great way to work on stand-up comedy.
Yeah, that's pretty much basically what I do, is just make fun of myself and then get drunk on stage, and, you know, people say I did a good job afterwards. So I'm like, okay, I guess so.
So when did you start doing stand-up?
Exactly a year ago, actually.
Cool. And are you sticking in, where are you, Pennsylvania? Is that where you are?
Yeah, I live in Philly, but most of my comedy is done in Manhattan. You know, the Stand NY, the Comedy Cellar, Eastville, places like that.
Okay. Have you popped into New Jersey? Because we at least used to have a couple comedy clubs.
I've been looking at the clubs around, you know, because so I live in Philly, so I would love to have a shorter commute to, you know, have a couple of minutes on stage. But I've not done anything in New Jersey yet.
Cool. The there was one that I went to, was up in the middle of nowhere, so that one I'm not even sure if it's still there. But the other one was down in New Brunswick, which is obviously like a booming college town. And, of course, there's even a train station. So it is good for that sort of thing if you're a city person.
There's one in Cherry Hill I've been meaning to check out. I forgot the name of the club, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's what I find strange in, and maybe that's not strange, maybe this is just normal, is that there's sort of like pop-up stand-up comedy in New Jersey where people show up to, like they show up to colleges or the, like, the PNC Art Center, and, you know, for a big performance. You know, so it's not necessarily that old, you know, like cinder block or brick enclosed comedy club, you know, where with a terrible buffet and cheap drinks.
No, actually, a lot of people are taking it amongst themselves now to start their own shows where they'll rent out like a Moose Lodge or a Night to Columbus. And those are popping up a lot, I've noticed, as well.
That's cool. I don't know if I've seen that around yet, but you know, at least it is nice if you live somewhat near a college. Chances are you'll perhaps at least discover somebody new. It might, if you're not getting the big name people yet.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Mike Birbiglia's Sleepwalk With Me?
I love that movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
I relate to that movie on many levels, to the point where I got depressed. I was like, wow, that is really sad.
He's just so wonderful. He's one of my favorite stand-up comedians.
The part with his whole relationship, I mean, I'm sort of going through that myself now on a lower level, but I related to that on a I had such a connection to that movie. It makes me want to cry.
Aw, I brought up something sad.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Puppies and kittens and cats on a Roomba dressed as a shark.
Oh, okay. I'm happy now.
So, the stand-up comedy, that's, you know, that's an odd thing, I think, for somebody to just break into. So this must have been in your mind before. You don't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I was dwelling on this extra strong word. I've been considering it for a while. And do you know Jim Hanley's Universe, the old location in Manhattan?
Yeah, I've been to the old one.
Yeah, they used to have comedy clubs there or comedy shows there, and they always mentioned open mic, and I've always wanted to do it, but I was scared to do it. And then last March, I saw my friend Rady perform at the Comedy Cellar. And this kid and I, we grew up together, went to high school together, we worked at McDonald's and lived together. So I was like, if this guy can do it, I can definitely do it. And he's actually blowing up now, which I'm really happy about.
Cool. What was his name again?
Rady Humphrey.
Rady Humphrey. I'll keep my eyes out. Now, do you think that there's a correlation between comic books and stand-up comedy? Because not all comic books are actually funny. Like, I mean, we used to have the funny pages, and they used to be called the funny books. But there's very few of them that are comedy books.
I think that there's a disconnect now more than ever. I mean, you do see some more of the funnier titles coming back, but I do think the connection between stand-up comedy and, you know, comics are about as different as, you know, lunch and dinner, basically.
Right.
Where they stem from the same, you know, thing, but it's just taking on life of its own now. I mean, I write serious comics. I try not to really do the funny stuff there. Because I was more influenced by, like, Jonathan Ames' work on The Alcoholic.
I love that book. I lost it in a move. I am so upset that I have lost that book. It was one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's actually a book that made me want to do more serious work. Because before that, I was doing, I changed the name of the title so many times. Let's just call it La Familia Targia. It's about an Italian superhero whose, you know, parents and grandparents were fighting people all the way back to Mussolini's time. So I was kind of, you know, doing your more superhero stuff. But then when I discovered The Alcoholic, I decided to go for a more serious approach to telling slice of life stories.
Yeah, that book, that one and I Kill Giants were two books that changed my life. And I'm really, really annoyed that I did an entire box of graphic novels went missing.
I'm sure that made someone happy somewhere.
I'm sure it did, those damn movers. So how did you decide that you wanted to make comics? Because I know it sort of took me a while. Like, you know, I didn't pay attention to the big credit list in the beginning, obviously, as a kid. I didn't know. But in high school, I really wanted to – I was interested in cartooning because I liked comic strips. So I sort of, I know it's like almost hard to tell the difference when you say that, you know, you're a cartoonist versus a comic book, you know, creator, but the awards people sure think there's a big difference. What was it for you? Like when you realized that this was something that people create and it's a team and you wanted to be part of that?
No, in high school, I used to mess around a lot with my friends. And, you know, we were the typical guys sitting at the lunch table talking about comics. And a couple of us could draw. A couple, like myself, could not draw. So we banded together and made funny little strips. My friend Colin Crose, who went to the Kubert School, he's doing something now. I forgot what, unfortunately. But we worked at McDonald's together. And in the back, you know, he ran the drive-thru and I was in the grill. But during the downtime, we would make little strips of the Hamburglar as kind of like a Dark Knight character taking on the other fast food mascots like Chuck E. Cheese and the Burger King Kids Club.
Oh, that could be wonderfully dark.
Yeah, we were really just trying to do something. I think we were on the Jane, Silent Bob phase back then. So we were trying to do something funny, but also a little on the serious end, like Dogma.
Because it reminds me of Death to Smoochie.
Yes. Oh, man. That movie's so good.
That's a great movie.
But that was my original, you know, attempt at doing comics. And I put it on the shelf for years. I mean, you know, I went to college and I got into, you know, drinking and partying and such. So comics kind of took a back burner for a couple of years until I got back into it. And I was like, oh, hey, I could possibly try to do something like this. Because, you know, as a creative person, I always had ideas, but I never really had an outlet to try to, you know, put them into until, you know, I actually sat down and put, you know, the business end together.
And you came up with the this book, Ashes, that mm-hmm. you ran a Kickstarter for.
Yeah.
And I'll let you, as the creator, tell the audience here what Ashes is about and why you made it.
Ashes is a comic about a firefighter, Matt Terwilliger, who loses his leg during a call. And that's where the story really starts. I feel that, I mean, during the TV shows and movies, you always see firefighters go in, and they either come out completely unscathed with a little bit of oxygen, or I'm sorry, smoke damage, or they die. There's no middle ground. Ashes is what happens when he goes down in a blaze of glory and then lives to talk about it and can't do anything else. I mean, he's on disability, he's on leave, his life pretty much goes to shit. Excuse my language. I know you gave him a warning earlier.
Not a problem on this show.
So it's just the story of a hero who had the hero's fall and is now just trying to climb his way back up. And the organization does not want anybody who has a disability involved at all because of liability and such. And the work aspect is a problem for him, but it's more the family aspect where we see a civil war in his family. His mom is supporting her son, but his dad is a company man. You know, he's been in the firefighting business for years, his father before him. So when his father takes the side of, you know, the bureaucrats versus his side, that's where we really start to see the conflicts arise.
And what kind of reference did you use for this? Did you know firefighters, or was this all complete research for you?
A mix of both. I mean, I don't have a whole bunch of firefighters in my social circle, but I did a whole lot of research. I went on a trip with my girlfriend to Boston, and we met some of her family friends, and one of them was a firefighter, so I really spoke to him for a while on, you know, just little things like how he started up as an EMT and such, you know, just so I can get the basic roots. I did a lot of research, and I also recalled back to when I was growing up, and we had a firehouse near us, you know, and just seeing how the guys acted and whatnot.
Yeah, it's really different because I live out sort of in the boondocks now, and it's all volunteer. And but my cousin was always a paid fireman his whole life. He lived in a bigger town, and his father was a paid fireman. So when we moved out here, and I had to sort of be taught like this, you know, what is a volunteer squad? What is a volunteer fireman? Like, I, you know, it's a culture here because, like, these folks, I mean, they get together, you know, a couple times a week. They're very dedicated to mm-hmm. their, you know, to it as they just sort of, they join like a family, basically, when you get into one of these volunteer groups. And a lot of times they're working with, like, you know, no resources at all, no budget. Sometimes, like, my dad had been on for many, many years. He was the local chief for a year even.
Oh, really?
That's yeah, cool. Because he was a truck driver. So, and we live right across the street from the firehouse. So it was one of those things where you couldn't take the truck out unless you had three people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he wasn't actually interested in the rest of it. He's like, all right, well, I will drive a truck for you so that you can get, you know, more people to actually be a crew. but it's, you know, it's one of those things. That's what they do here. And they go and they help pump people's houses out when there's floods and stuff like that. It's I don't know if it's the same in a city like Philadelphia.
I'm actually not too sure.
I can't even imagine what it's like there, because I watch the news every day, but I watch the New York ABC News, mm-hmm. and I am not kidding, every day there's a fire story.
Oh, yeah, it's just...
Every single day. I mean, even if it's Jersey, even if it's like, you know, Hoboken or whatever, it's every single day is another fire story.
Yeah, those guys really are on the clock all the time. I don't really know too much about the volunteer firefighters, but I assume it's similar, like a similar love for the most part, right?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's just it's a very different type of style, a very different type of life where, you know, you don't go to the firehouse and live there for like a 4-day shift and then go home or whatever. And I don't even know if that's still how it's done, but that you kind of used to be the thing anyway.
Yeah, they have the beds upstairs and
yeah.
stuff.
You know, and of course the fireman's calendar.
Yes. You know, Carl and I were actually joking, saying that we should put out a fireman's calendar of us just to promote the book.
Oh, you should do that.
He said he doesn't have enough time to hit the gym between now and then.
He doesn't. Do you watch Suburgatory?
Yes, I watch Suburgatory.
You saw the episode with the Christmas calendar or whatever, the calendar?
Yeah, I feel like George sometimes, where I just want to go running with a garbage bag over my sweats to really, you know, get rid of the water weight.
Yeah, that just seems so awful. It's such an awful thing to do. And I know that's what I saw Silver Linings Playbook, and that's what he was doing in that.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's a lot of running around in garbage bags. I think that's how Martin Lawrence had a stroke in L.A., wasn't it, a couple years ago?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, he had a heat stroke running down one of the freeways on the little partition. He was running with sweats and a bag over him in 90-something degree weather.
I thought, like, when I saw that in Silver Linings Playbook, I thought it was because, like, you know, maybe it was gonna rain, and that was just, like, you know, cheap rain slicker to just go out running in. It didn't dawn on me that he was doing that to sweat.
Yeah, I mean, it is a great way to, you know, get your heart going faster, but that's also a dangerous way to get heat stroke. Advisory warning, do not run outside with a garbage bag over you.
Don't do that. That's awful, people. But I think you and Carl should do a calendar, or at least even if you can't do a whole calendar, do sort of like some pinups. Do some cheesecake for me.
All right, I will try to convince him again.
Yeah.
New York Comic Con, we'll see.
This has to be done. And then you can make a Christmas card out of it.
It's actually not bad of an idea, actually.
See?
Happy holidays from Carl and Mario. Here we go.
Awesome. So how did you guys meet? How did you meet him?
I put up a post on Pencil Jack, and he responded. It really is the most boring story I've ever told.
I was traveling across the moors, and I was out of water. There he was.
The reason I chose him was because he actually went to Kubert School with a couple of artists that I previously worked with. And I tend to really want to work with, you know, people that I worked before or people that they know rather than just a complete stranger.
I would agree, yeah. It's good to at least have some sort of reference.
I mean, I don't know if you follow Bleeding Cool too much.
Not much.
Okay, well, Rich always has a piece about this guy called Josh Hoops, who is a predator. There's no other word. He goes around these message boards and poses as a writer or as an artist, and he pretty much scams people for their money. And I fell for that once, so ever since then, I feel kind of burned.
That sucks.
Yeah, I lost $500, you know, on a script that I thought an artist was drawing. What he did is he took my script and then went to another artist and said, okay, draw this. And I'll give you money. So that artist drew X number of pages and sent it to him, which he sent to me saying he did it, so I can give him money. And then that artist, A, received no money for their work, and then I was conned out of everything because I didn't have an actual artist.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. That's one of the advisory lessons for making comics. Always do extra research to see if the person is who they really are.
Right, and I know that can be really hard, especially with creators that are, you know, they're not in the same country. Mm-hmm. So you might not have anybody that's a mutual friend, you know, but I like there's some great people coming out of Europe and South America that do beautiful stuff. And what's cool is when I see those personal references, like somebody, you know, took a chance, the person created a decent book. So I'll contact them and say, hey, just so I know, what were your page rates? And, you know, hey, hopefully someday things will happen.
Yeah, I try to do my research with references as well, too. Also, Skype is a great tool where I can see them face-to-face, you know, and make sure that they're not fishing me.
Yeah, well, I think Skype is definitely almost a necessity for creative teams. Or, you know, because you can do so much through email, you certainly can. But if you're brainstorming and spitballing, if it's very collaborative, I think you need the open discussion.
Oh, yeah, I had that last week. I'm working on a new short comic called Epilogue with I have a number of artists, but I was working with Ashley St. Lawrence through Skype, and we were just, you know, discussing the process and such of what I want from her section. And it was a lot easier than just, you know, emails back and forth where, you know, people do it during their time, right, whenever they can fit it in.
And I want to hear about your Trip City project as well.
Yes, the Reception is a 10-part monthly webcomic. None of the parts really interact with each other, but The Reception is a series of short stories that are just there's all over the place. It's like, you know, I put a whole bunch of ideas in a shotgun and blew it out my ass.
Sure. No, I'm into the short stories. That's what I primarily write.
Oh, then this hopefully was right up your alley. The only thing is, The Reception, all of the stories take place around the same wedding reception. I don't want to say in, because there's one or two scenes that deal with what's going on at the wedding. You know, someone's sad that they're not there and so forth.
Okay.
But it's all centered around the same event. None of the characters overlap. You do not see the bride and the groom for the most part. I did a segment with Dean Haskell, and he showed a little bit of history of the bride through her former best friend's point of view. But I tried not to get it's their night, it's their big day. Fuck them, tell the story about someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's your story. You're going to tell it the way that you want. I love Dean. He's a great guy, and I love how he embraces promoting creator-owned work. And even, you know, because he's like done everything, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But he's really got a good thing going there.
I looked at him like one of my mentors in this comic world. Like I said, you know, I was trying to do more superhero stuff until I saw his work, and then I was like, okay, this is what I really want to do, more Woody Allen-type comics. But Dean has really been there for me, helping me out. I mean, he's even looked at scripts, you know, before they're even good and told me if they sucked or not. tried to direct me to more of what he feels I want to do.
Okay.
And he was really cool to work with, too. That was one of my dreams. I have the pages. I bought the original pages off of him, and they're hanging on my office at home.
That's awesome. So how did you run into him originally?
Well, like I said, I read The Alcoholic, and when I saw online that they were having an extras casting from Bored to Death in Brooklyn a couple of years ago, I jumped on there knowing that he was going to be there. I'm sure you know he won the Emmy for that show.
No.
Oh, yeah. Do you remember Bored to Death on HBO?
No. I didn't have HBO for like a really long time, so I've never even heard of it.
Oh, well, Bored to Death is a really quirky show. You would love it. It's written by Jonathan Ames, created by him, and it's about a detective. Well, it's about a writer who wants to be a detective, so he goes on Craigslist promoting himself as one. And it's an out-there comedy, but Dean was the main artist on the intro, the title sequence. So so when they won an Emmy for, you know, best title sequence, I believe it was, he was up there, and he has pictures of him in his nice suit with the statue.
Aww. I like to see him without a suit on, quite frankly. And I told him this, that his little centerfold pieces that he does are awesome. Like, I will completely objectify you, Dean Haskell. I will.
Yeah. Does he ever really wear a shirt? It seems he's always...
I hope not. I don't think he should ever.
But no, he's a really great guy. I emailed him before the shoot, and I was like, hey, I'm a big fan, but I'd like to work with you if possible. And you know, he responded back to me saying he'll talk to me then. We were filming in Brooklyn for 2 days straight, I think like 18-hour days in some basement, and I spoke to him for maybe 5 minutes in total. But, you know, we built a relationship off of that, you know, and I feel like I can email him with questions, but he really has helped me out with, you know, putting the reception together, finding artists that I could work with, and also eventually helping me get it on Trip City, which has really helped me get it out there into the people. And it's free, so.
Right. Yeah. It's great. I mean, I was very fortunate that, you know, about a month ago, I was able to sit with him and some of the guys. I met Seth from Trip City as well. Sit and have drinks after a Comic-Con here in Jersey. So it was just nice to be, you know, out socializing.
Yeah, they like their alcohol. That's one of the best parts about comic convention.
It really is. It's the best part of conventions is always after the convention.
Yeah, if you ever want to meet one of your favorite artists, walk up to him and buy him a beer.
Yes. And if you're really lucky, one of your favorite artists will have drinks at their booth, like Andy Parks, who gives people a shot at
really?
His booth. Yeah.
Oh, man. I've had the opposite, actually. I went to, what's his name, Michael Avon Oeming?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a couple years ago, he put up a random tweet or I think it was a blogger post back then, maybe a MySpace message, jeez. But he said that he would give a free sketch to anyone who brought him a bottle of Stoli. So I went to the store, I purchased one, and I went over to his booth and gave him a bottle of vodka right there.
Nice. See, I would totally give you a sketch for a good bottle of vodka, but not that stuff. But my sketches are terrible, and I, you know, but it would be from my heart.
And that's really where it counts, right?
It is. Like, you know, I can draw like a headshot of a cartoony Wonder Woman. I do that all the time. I do bar art, draw bar napkins. It's great.
Well, that you do for a bottle of vodka, right?
Yeah, I know. And that's just it. And I've gotten into, you know, like tasting different vodkas, and I don't really know. Like, I'm not a bartender. I don't know anything about the distilling process and whatnot, but I found a really good organic vodka called American Harvest, but I don't know where to get it. My local store that I normally shop at didn't have it, but they had a different organic one, so that's now in my freezer chilling. I can't wait to try it.
What's the difference in organic vodka and regular vodka? Because I don't really look. I just kind of just take and drink.
I believe it's how the rye is farmed.
Okay. Cause I don't know, I for the longest time I was drinking Crystal Palace because it was the cheapest kind you could buy, and then I graduated to, you know, your more absolutes, your Kettle One, then eventually what is it, Russian Standard, and now I'm on to Ciroc because my favorite rapper drinks it, so I say why shouldn't I?
Oh, well, doesn't he own half of the company?
Well, I guess he's getting half my paycheck now, so.
Something like that. I thought he owned the company. I don't know, but I like the Van Gogh vodkas, but I like the flavors. I actually have had their other, like their plain vodka is like won awards and stuff, and I didn't like it very much at all. But their flavors to me, because they're not disgustingly sweet, you actually get the flavor of whatever it's trying to be. So except for caramel. Caramel is just a sweet flavor. But like the black cherry, the rich dark chocolate, they're really incredible.
Maybe I'm doing it wrong. I've never been able to taste the flavors in vodka. I mean, I've bought, you know, your absolutes, all like the whole rainbow, basically, and it just tastes like burning to me.
Right? Yeah, see, and that's the thing. It's like I can't, you know, I just don't want to deal with that, and I really don't need, like, sickeningly sweet stuff, you know, like the cotton candies and all that. Like, I tried the, I don't know, one of the cake ones or the whipped cream ones or some stupid, and it's like that stuff tastes so awful to me.
The only flavor I've ever been able to taste is Skinny Girl Vodka, I believe it was.
I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was just gimmicky or if it was good.
I don't know. I watched Real Housewives, all of them.
Yeah.
And when I saw Bethany had her own vodka line, I was like, well, I like vodka, so let me try this out.
Okay. Yeah, because I do like, you know, I do like some gimmicks. Because mm-hmm. I like a pretty bottle. You know, I like the artwork on beer labels. You know, it's these are weird consumer things that I, you know, if I'm going to spend my money on something, I want to enjoy all of it.
Oh, yeah, it's got to lead you in. It can't just have a Dharma label on it.
Yeah.
And now I could talk about vodka all day.
I know. Well, it's, you know, and it's not even National Vodka Day, but there is a Twitter feed to follow for National Vodka Day. So you should go look that up.
I will take a drink every time they tweet.
I support that decision. Unless you're driving. Don't do that.
No. Oh, man. Drinking and driving is not good, especially in the boondocks.
Yeah, I know. But they'll shoot and drink here.
Oh, you're in that part of Jersey?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, there's.
I know some of Jersey. My girlfriend went to school up in Mahwah. That's way north.
Yeah. Well, see, as you mentioned, Cubert people, I'm close to there.
Oh, Dover, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I had the pleasure of working until I got a day job.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I was modeling there. I wasn't, like, working there. I was
modeling. Well, like, were you, you know, helping out for Cubert, like, bringing their art boards?
No, that would be awesome. But I got to, so I got to model there, and I worked for, like, some really great teachers, like Kim DeMolder and Joel Tidy. Joel's awesome. He's just the best anatomy teacher I've ever seen for an art school. And he was just, you know, sometimes it's hard because it would be broken down to, like, a morning class and then an afternoon class. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously sometimes people are going to be tired either in the morning or they're going to be sleepy after lunch. And, you know, and sometimes if the class doesn't have this synergy amongst themselves as like a unit, it sort of feels like they have no life in them at all. And you just, it's almost like their experience is going to be hurt simply because they're not enjoying each other's presence. And, you know, because it's different. It's not like when you go off to college and you see different people every hour.
Yeah.
You know, it's a small arrangement. So, you know, there were times when I just felt like, oh, wow, this class is just having a brutal, brutal time. And then there were other, I mean, I just, for the most part, literally like 90% of the time, had an amazing time there. I mean, I got to like, freaking pose with swords and axes. It was like the best job ever. So it's definitely anybody who comes out of that school is definitely worth teaming up and collaborating with.
One of my favorite artists actually went to that school, Shane Davis.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I think he still lives in Dover. I'm not too sure. Probably shouldn't say that out loud on the internet.
Go find him.
Yeah, his Earth One people are trying to either hate him or love him. But, no, I do, whenever I'm looking at resumes to potential collaborators, I will see if they went to the Cubert School and look at them more closely than I would anyone else. I mean, I'll still give anyone else a chance, but Cubert School people, I know, okay, they have...
They have the chops. And
yeah, they have that thing I'm looking for, the je ne sais quoi, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, and if they have not had a complete meltdown, usually the meltdowns come between second and third year, where people don't necessarily come back by third year. But if they make it, then they are now used to the typical life of a comic book artist, which is like, you know, working 16 hours a day because you're probably doing 8 hours at another job if you're not breaking into graphic arts and corporate arts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not in the commercial side yet, you know, you might be doing something else. But, you know, then you go home and you make your comics.
It is a labor of love for a lot of those guys. I mean, that's why I always offer to pay page rates, because I know it's got to be tough.
Well, the writers are the same way, though. I mean, I know people that don't even start writing till they put their kids to bed at 9 o'clock, and I am dumbfounded by this, because at 9 o'clock, my brain is off at 5. Like, right now, this is just sort of like an automaton hologram thing going. I just turned the program on, and it's
You're going through the motions.
Yeah. It's literally the same questions every guest. No, kidding.
I don't even know how I write, to be honest. I mean, I watch so much TV and I just sit there on the couch. Sometimes I'm just like, hey, this is an idea. Let me write this down.
I'm a rare morning person. So even if I'm like groggy in the morning, I'm still better functioning in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So especially after, like, if I listen to a good podcast that's really inspiring, like Writing Excuses or something like that, I'm like, ah, yeah. As soon as I get out of this traffic, I'm just going to sit down at my desk and I'm going to ignore everybody else and I'm going to, like, open my Google documents and I'm going to write. And, it, you know, it's like walk in the door and bam, I forgot what I was going to do. Never fails.
I have a voice recorder on my phone just for like when those moments hit. Like if I have a joke or a story idea, I'll just say it into there real quick.
Yeah, I downloaded one of those recently so that I could test it out as like a sort of podcast recorder on the road. And I mean, I don't like it as much as an actual really good MP3 recorder, but I mean, it got the job done.
Yeah, and you only have so many pockets, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, I'm like, I only have so much money, too. Like, I don't feel like spending another, you know, $189 on a new voice recorder.
And batteries, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
No, I'm the same way. Inspiration will hit randomly out of anywhere. How I got the idea for Epilogue, which is a short comic I hope to have out by New York Comic Con, is I was listening to the radio on my commute, and I heard, what is it, Gautier, Someone You Used to Know? And then right after that was Adele's. Wait, maybe that was someone I used to know. Wait, what was Adele? Someone Like You?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they played back-to-back, and I didn't think anything of it until I was like, wow, these two songs really sound like two different sides of the same story. And, you know, right after that, I couldn't wait to get into my office and just start typing up, you know, an outline for Epilogue, which is just a story of two lovers who, 10 years after the fact, randomly bump into each other.
How do you feel about, you know, the perpetual romances, like, mainstream-wise, like, Hawk Girl and Hawk Man? Aren't they, like, always finding each other and then, like, they die and then they have to re-find each other again because they're based on Egyptian gods?
Oh, isn't that the best thing? I mean, didn't Tom Hanks just have a movie about that, basically?
Yeah, and now there's, like... I mean, I guess it's a little bit the same, but there's a lot of amnesia stories that are like that. You know, there's like 50 First Dates, and now there's like basically a TV show version of that.
Oh, yeah, ABC Family, right? No, it was ABC Movie, I believe. I know what you're talking about.
I don't know, but I think it's a show. I think it's going to be like every time the guy wakes up, he has to read all of his notes to make the girl fall in love with him again.
Well, that would be tedious for a TV series, wouldn't it?
I know, that's what I thought. I'm like, this is not going to work.
Would every episode just be a whole new day?
Yeah, like Groundhog Day.
Interesting.
But I think handling romance in comics is, it's not always done well. It's just sort of like, bam, there's a relationship.
Like in superhero comics or just comics?
Yeah, okay. In superhero comics.
You got to make way for, you know, the big fights. I mean, Bendis will not have a living if it was just, you know, double page, you know, like beatdowns.
Yeah.
You got to throw some random oddball stuff out there, you know, characters hooking up or doing whatever.
And that's, and it's a funny but, like, tricky thing because as a kid, I hated the Fantastic Four. I just found them boring, and my listeners have heard me tell that a million times. But I find Sue Storm very fascinating, and I call her Sue Storm. I don't call her Richards. I find her fascinating, and because she does literally do everything, and you know, her husband is like negligent and disappears and whatever. So there was like this scene a couple years ago in the Hickman arc where she becomes the queen of the oceans and takes over, and Namor was obviously expecting that he would take over.
Yeah.
And she just gives him this like sort of bitch slap and, you know, and just the way that they look at each other, it was just so well done. And it's like he, you know, it's like you have got this man wrapped around your finger. Like, he would do anything for her. He is that in love with her. And it's one of those just cool tropes where it's always like there's always a weakness in the big, bad, evil guy. And, you know, for him, it's, you know, this beautiful superheroine.
Well, it's always the forbidden fruit, right? I mean, that's one of the best things about their relationship.
Yeah, of course.
You know they'll never get together unless it's an alternate reality, but...
And the fact that she could kill him, like, yes. So easily.
I'm sure the other way around, too. I mean, if you really got... I mean, you've seen his temper before in other books. He really just freaks out.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, something about those two. They really are, I guess, kind of the original version of what Alex and Emma became in X-Men. Before the hookup, of course.
Oh, okay. I don't know. She's been.
Oh, not Alex. Sorry, Scott. I'm mixing up my Summers brothers.
Yeah, I knew who you meant.
I'm gonna get hate tweets for that.
You will. Sorry. We mean Cyclops. We totally do.
Cyclops was right.
But she, yeah. I mean, you know, the White Queen's been with everybody.
But that was well done. But on the flip side, you have horrible love stories. I mean, who was it? It was in some Justice League book where Green Lantern was bragging about having a three-way with Huntress and Power Girl, I think.
Are you kidding? Did that really happen, or was that just him quipping?
It was something he was talking. It was in James Robinson's Justice League. I forgot the name of it, unfortunately. But it was something that everyone just got up in arms about. Maybe it wasn't Huntress and Power Girl, but it was definitely Huntress and someone else. And they're saying, you know, wow, that's disgusting. Why would you throw that out there as a character moment?
I guess it depends on the character.
But
I mean, you know, because Dr. Manhattan, do we call him Dr. Manhattan? Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. He just multiplied himself, you know, right there in the bedroom.
Yeah, he went Jimmy Madrox.
It's, you know, maybe that's different because they're still all supposed to be him. But, you know, his callous excuse, you know, well, I'm busy and I want you to be happy. I want nothing more than make you happy. It was just like, but what? But you're busy?
That's fun. But that is such the character where he would just, you know, still focus on whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, I suppose Reed Richards would have done that with one of his 100 clones or whatever the hell he ended up making. I don't know. Something stupid.
Yeah, you'd think he'd stretch one of his eyeballs out to his monitor while he's doing the business, right? Just keep an eye on whatever project he's working on.
Yeah, I guess he just didn't care. I guess he just didn't care enough. He was too busy. Gotta save the world.
Oh, man. Fantastic Four.
Could you do that? Are you a romantic? Could you, like, you know, spend time with, you know, the love of your life instead of saving the world, or would you have to save the world?
You know, my girlfriend says I can't focus on two things at once, so I think it'd have to be one or the other. I'd probably want to spend the end of the days with her instead of, you know, going out there to save things.
Die together.
Oh, before she kills me, probably, yes.
That's okay. She won't listen to this.
I'm going to make sure she listens. I'm going to send her right now. She's actually right outside the door probably listening to me as he's okay. Taking notes. You know.
What is he saying?
No, I hear her walking around with the dogs, and I'm hoping they don't bark and make noise.
I'm trying to be, you know, the Barbara Walters of pop culture here. I want you to cry. I want you to tell me all about your personal life.
Oh, man, where do I begin? Well, that's actually part of my comedy stand-up where I talk about my history, where I had two gay parents growing up, and that is my full-on set right there.
Well, there we go. That is awesome.
It was something like, you know, growing up, I was really, like, embarrassed about, because that was before being gay was really cool. So it's kind of like, oh, you know, I don't know if I'm going to have people over because it's kind of one of those things. You don't want to get made fun of as a teenager. But now as an adult, you're like, sure, fuck it. I have two gay dads. Whatever.
Whatever. That's cool. So do you have something that, you, like pop culture-wise, since that's what we're talking about, that you feel represented the gay culture really well? Because, like, I love Modern Family and New Normal. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how realistic those, you know, that is. I mean, everybody's always got great jobs and beautiful houses and, you know, it's, I don't know that they're going to address struggles in life the same way, but the stuff around their, like, surrounding their children is always hilarious.
The closest thing I've seen, honestly, is on Bravo, A Brad World, which is just, you know, it's a reality show. But, and he was in Dubai a couple episodes ago, and he was talking about, you know, how it's hard being, it's basically illegal to be gay out there, and he was out there for some business thing. You don't really think about that type of stuff, really, living out in America, where, yeah, sure, people hate the gays, but it's not illegal. You're not going to get thrown in jail and beheaded for it.
Openly. Right. Yeah, I have some news alerts that I, you know, when I see some of these devastating stories, like in Africa, how people are tortured and jailed and, you know, just some of the most inhumane things that we think of. And I read this story today that was just, you know, these poor people were killed. These boys were killed because their parents paid for them to go to one of these conversion camps where they were tortured. And, you know, literally the most horrific concentration camp-like abuse of human beings. And it was to un-gay them. You know, and now the parents are, like, trying to sue the facility. Like, they didn't know. Like, the facility had this great success rate or something.
Yeah, that's not cool.
And it's like, are you freaking kidding? They've got, a track record of killing, of actual death. If you're not rehabilitated and straight at the end of this, you might be dead.
I said, that's not cool, but that's how the world is, unfortunately. I mean,
yeah.
We see America starting to come around to it more and more now. I mean, you'll see the movies with the gay bestie. Which is cliche now.
Oh, it is. Yeah, Happy Endings is a great show, and they've got the, you know, gay BFF there.
He's totally like the non-gayest guy I've ever seen on TV, too.
Yeah, true. He's you know, bearish.
I mean, but we're only a couple of years behind when the first man-on-man kiss on TV. Was it 2004, I think, Will and Grace, where they had the first real kiss between two guys?
Oh, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was out of high school then. I was in college. That really wasn't that long ago. But, you know, the rest of the world's still catching up. I mean, there's riots in France right now because they're legalizing gay marriage.
Right. Right.
I thought France would be the gayest place on earth, to be honest, but that should be what I know about them.
Yeah, I know. I was actually pretty surprised about France as well because they're so progressive with other parts of life. That I just didn't expect it to be that way. But, oh well, what do I know? I've only been there for like a day, so. But yeah, and like we were talking about, today's news is that this Jason somebody or other, oh look, I can open up Twitter and see his name, Jason Collins. AKA who? Guy I never heard of. Yeah, so he's like come out as like a gay NBA player, so it's a really big deal because it's a mainstream team sport. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, and I'm like, he's not the first gay athlete. What the hell are they talking about? And I'm thinking of like the figure skaters and like Greg Louganis and, you know, and then everybody starts listing all of the women and they're like, well, because women athletes, screw them. They don't count, right?
The WNBA, you either go pro or become a gym teacher. I mean,
yeah, I mean, like the soccer players, the tennis players. I mean, we've historically had some out-of-the-closet lesbians for quite some time.
I think he's the first active roster gay person to come out.
Yeah. Well, and I think the reason that there's an impact is because when it comes to a team sport, there's always the locker room controversy and stuff like that. And it's been addressed in television shows and fiction, you know, plenty of times. So I guess it was just a matter of, you know, when was it going to happen? And I'm like, what the hell's his name? Chris Cluey? I don't know. The one football player who's also a nerd. He was just, he put out these blog posts, you know, basically open letters to senators, smacking them down, going, you know, why does it matter to you what somebody...
Oh, the kicker, right?
Yeah, why does it matter to you what somebody does? Yeah, so he's barely a football player. But...
he's more of a soccer player, right?
Yeah, but you know, but still, he's got some kind of clout, and you know, he didn't hold back. He was just like, "This is my opinion, and these people should be allowed to be left alone." So shut up. So, But yeah, so whoever Jason Collins is, I don't know who he is, but I know that people were wondering, like, why is this guy? Because there was some douchebag, I guess. I don't know if he's a journalist or whatever. Was saying, gee, we sure are throwing the word hero around. It's not like we're storming Normandy. And, so what I said on Facebook is I posted that link about this terrible thing that happened to these kids in South Africa, mm-hmm. who, killed by this conversion camp. And I said, because this still goes on, a hero is somebody who's courageous and brave, regardless of any fear. And it doesn't have to be in the military, and it doesn't have to be, somebody on a rescue team, going into the rubble. No, this guy's life is likely never to be in danger doing what he does. But, because it's strange to me that obviously, like, when an entertainer or somebody of celebrity comes out as gay, like, that's news. Like, who gives a shit? Like, Matt Bomer's gay. Great. So, but it's sad that it still has to be news.
Well, my thing about Jason is I wanted to know how this is going to affect him as a player, because I know that right now, whatever team he plays for, they're probably going to really, like, the PR people are going to get on everyone's home to just shut up about it if they have any opinions, the other players. And they're probably not going to keep him around, but I'm going to wonder about the behind-the-scenes stuff that you probably won't hear about for years and years down the road. Will he be frozen out, basically stonewalled in the locker room?
Well, I don't know, because, obviously people can manipulate and be awful human beings mm-hmm. in very clever ways. I just watched the movie Kinky Boots. Fantastic. Sometimes you just have to figure out how to work together, even when you can't stand each other.
Yeah.
But, like the Rutgers teacher, coach who got fired because he was calling kids like fag or whatever in mm-hmm. practice. So this coach lost his job, and he also got a $475,000 severance check. Not a bad way to lose your job, in my opinion.
So they're hiring currently, right?
They placed somebody, I guess, in the role. But I was just like, okay, so you're trying to make a statement here. First of all, this guy had already had a $50,000 fine previously mm-hmm. for his abuse of the kids. And mind you, he's not abusing gay kids that we know of.
He's just busting balls in a really derogatory way.
Right. So he already had a $50,000 fine, and judging on the paycheck, I'm guessing that barely even he didn't give a shit. Obviously, he didn't learn a lesson because he kept up with it. But, $475,000 to not work, great. He'll just, maybe go on some speaking circuit and charge, $20,000 for, 20 minutes of time to get me.
They just put him on a pedestal, didn't they, for all those other people who, really do believe what he was saying.
Yeah, I don't know. It excuses it, giving, But that's, that's where we are. And I know, obviously, LGBT topics have been an issue in comic books for the last couple of years. When it really started, they reinvented Batwoman because she wasn't gay before, and now all of a sudden they've created a Batwoman character that's gay.
Yeah, it seems like they're really grasping for PR on some of the things. But, maybe to me it does. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, because a lot of times it just doesn't feel like a natural thing when they change a character that's already been in existence for decades, as opposed to just, hey, I've introduced a new character, she happens to be gay. Like Starling from Birds of Prey. It just happened. It was just in there. You didn't even question it. It was just like, okay.
I remember Judd Winnick was the gay guy for a while, where every book he went on, you were wondering which character is going to be gay.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember that, what he did.
No, I think I read him when he wrote Catwoman.
See, I wasn't really reading DC back then, but I remember a Green Arrow. He made someone have HIV.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was definitely one of the arrows.
But he also made someone gay, too, a couple of times. So you always wondered, you know, the joke was, well, which character is going to be gay next when he goes on?
Well, you can assume that with a Joss Whedon franchise, any project he's on as well. He's going to have that in Gail Simone. Gail, apparently, new trans character came out like 2-3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. No spoiler alerts, right?
It's no, because that was the headline.
That felt a little forced. I don't know if you read that issue.
No.
All right. Yeah, it was in Batgirl. I don't know. I've been reading Batgirl since it was relaunched.
I read the page, actually. Somebody did post the page, so I did read through it.
Like that character's been in there, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, Barbara told a secret, so she's like, oh, I also told a secret. And I'm like, okay, that felt like a little more natural than other secrets, but it still felt like, you know, a little off. I mean, she does a great job writing it, but I wonder if it was her decision or someone else's decision.
Oh, you really never know. Yeah, you never know what DC.
I mean, hold on. Wasn't she fired off the book and brought back? Yeah. So I wonder if that was one of those last-minute changes.
Yeah, she was fired for like 24 hours. And then people went berserk.
The power of Twitter.
Yeah. And, you know, and the other big comic book news is today it was announced that the Comics Alliance website is closing. AOL owns them, and they're closing Comics Alliance. And it was a very good site. They had some really talented writers that really knew how to like analyze the industry and stuff, but you know, they're talented. I'm sure they will land on their feet.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that. I mean, I got to work a couple hours ago, so I didn't have too much time to really jump around the internet, but I saw something on Robot 6 about it. But
yeah.
Well, but like I said, those guys are talented, so odds are they will find a job.
Yeah, or you know, it didn't take long before the tweets started saying, run a Kickstarter, start your, you know, become your own independent Comics Alliance website, and who knows, it could happen, I guess.
And Kickstarter is a blessing, and it's also a curse sometimes. I mean, I can't talk too much because I had a successful Kickstarter that ended a couple days ago, and I'm really thankful for that. But I feel like everything's getting a Kickstarter now.
It is. Literally, I think everybody I know has had a Kickstarter.
Zach Braff's movie has one. Does he really need it?
Does he need it? No, not at all.
Garden State was a great movie, but... And I'm sure he's been trying to make, what is it, Wish You Were Here, or whatever it's called?
Yeah.
He's been trying to make that for a while, unsuccessfully. But, who is it? Bill Willingham has a Kickstarter that I heard doesn't even offer the book until you get really high up in the perks.
Yes. Willingham and Frank Cho, who are two people that I like a lot, but when I started hearing that sort of, that was their business model, it just seemed really, really strange.
Isn't it just a novel with pictures every couple of pages?
Yeah, like spot illustrations.
Do they really need $40,000 for that?
I guess if they're going to spend, I don't know, 6 months working on it, then that's the salary for each of them, I suppose. I don't know. I don't know how they're...
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like that's something that he could just write, you know. I mean, everyone wants to get paid, of course.
Well, that's just it. I mean, there is no reason that two people that successful wouldn't have agents and publishers already lined up.
Exactly.
At which point, they would go the traditional publishing route, and they would get paid by a publisher.
I mean, Carl and I doing this Kickstarter, I mean, I'm still going to be in the hole for $2,000 when everything's said and done, even sure. With the money that we raised. But that's just because I put a lower goal, you know, because I have a day job, but I still want to take money aside. But these guys asking for $40,000 for that, I don't know. Like you said, it seems a little weird.
Right. But you know, that's our comics chatter, if you will. Where can people find information about you?
I am all over Twitter, the other Mario C, one word. I got that because Mario Cantone is one of my favorite comedians. So I was like, well, I can't put Mario C, so the other Mario C.
Got it.
On Twitter. And I don't have Facebook, but I have Google Plus, and that's just a long string of letters, numbers. But on my Twitter page, I have a My URLs link that has, you know, a link to my my YouTube videos for all my stand-up sets, as well as, you know, a link to my IMDb and my Google Plus. And also my When Nerds Attack section.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we're going to fit this in right now, before, you know, so we're just going to have a little bit of a long show. Okay. When Nerds Attack blogs. You said you talk up, you know, you guys are talking about giving tips and advice on attending Comic-Cons and things that you should know. And
yes.
So recently there was this whole, like, cosplay does not equal consent controversy coming up. And some of the, it's such crap to me. Some of it is really, like, victim blaming and victim shaming, if you will, that, well, you wore that, you need to expect to get slapped on the ass. No.
It's like, yeah, it's like Chappelle said, just because I dress like a police officer does not make me a cop.
Yeah, no.
Just because you dress like that does not make you, you know, whatever they think you are in their eyes.
I mean, and trust me, like, I was very close with law enforcement for years, and I was always taught and reminded about things about be aware of your surroundings, and be careful, you know, if you're walking alone, and, you know, carry your keys this way in case you need to gouge somebody in the eye. You know, always look for security officers. I mean, you know, it was one of those things where it was just ingrained in me as a person and had nothing, you know, it was decades before I ever put on spandex.
Yeah, that's weird. Growing up as a girl for you and growing up as a guy for me, it's going out and your parents saying, be careful, means two different things.
Yeah.
For you, it meant, you know, holding your keys to really fight someone off. For me, go out, be careful, meant don't get drunk and do something stupid.
Right, exactly.
So that really is two different Americas right there, where you're talking about, you know, don't, you know, try to stay in pairs.
Right. You know, and it's not to say that the advice is completely stupid, but as a woman who does go places alone, I shouldn't have to feel like I don't belong there because I need to have a buddy system. You know, that just irks the shit out of me. Like, I should not have to cater to somebody else's bad behavior or criminal behavior, depending on the extent of things. You know, I went to a convention where somebody groped me inappropriately, and I was by myself, and I was wearing freaking shiny freaking PVC latex suit. You don't get the right to touch me unless you ask me, hey, can I take a picture? And you put your arm around me, fine. No, this person walked by, I was texting, so he knew I wasn't looking, you know, and ran his hand across and knew.
That's just skeevy. I mean,
it's absolutely skeevy.
Oh, that's pissing me off. I mean, I was brought up to, you know, I don't know. that's just weird.
Be a gentleman.
That's what I'm through. Sorry, I'm still thinking about, like, how do people have the stu nods to really walk up and do something like that? Really? I mean, come on.
Yeah. You know, and at that point, it should be perfectly acceptable to punch somebody in the face or kick them in the groin.
Did you do that?
No, because I sort of get terrorized. Like, I literally get frozen.
Mm.
So all I said was, excuse me, don't ask. You better ask next time. She's just like, oh, sorry. I just wanted to feel the fabric.
Huh.
Like, you jackass. But I acknowledged it because I wasn't going to let it go without acknowledging, but I literally couldn't move. Like, my hands were frozen. My body was completely frozen.
I hate stories like that. I mean, I see a lot of guys at Comic-Cons just take pictures of girls, you know. I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you can't take the pervy pictures of them sitting down. You happen to get a little up the skirt action, you know. That's just, ugh. I don't know.
Yeah, there's Flickr accounts dedicated to just butt shots of cosplayers, and that's just skeevy.
I've seen the opposite of that, where it's pictures of dudes taking pictures like that.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah.
I
was like, okay, that's good to turn the tables on them.
Yeah, but it's absolutely appreciated. I know one of my friends had a problem where a guy was clearly, like, he dropped the camera. He was about to snap a picture of her ass, and, you know, she had a guy friend there who was just, like, holding the bags and everything and helping out and saw it and, like, moved in front of it. And it's like, yes, bam. We're not saying that, you know, comic book guys are slime. We're saying that that comic book guy is a piece of shit and this is a stand-up guy who took care of the problem. And she was not even aware. Like, she was busy posing for pictures.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I mean, it's a bad example of the overall fan base, you know, that someone like that could paint other people as horrible, you know? Like, not all comic guys have pillows that they're married to and live with their parents in their basement. Not all comic guys are also pervy like that, too.
Yeah. I mean, I also don't understand the underage girls with the free hug signs either. I mean, I just think that's wrong.
I don't like being hugged, so it's a no sale for me either way. I mean, you know, I don't want to get the con sickness either way from them.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just like, I guess it's just exciting and whatever. You know, do your hugs amongst your peers, but the random free hugs in the Javits Center with 100,000 people around is just stupid.
That's an attention grab, isn't it?
That's just a bad move. That has nothing to do with sharing love and camaraderie. I mean, hey, they're allowed to do it, obviously, but I think that any men that go up to those girls are, you know, not thinking clearly. Not that the girls aren't thinking clearly. I'm just saying that any guy that takes advantage of that situation is taking advantage of an underage girl with a free hug sign.
I haven't really considered that. That is something we should probably try to cover on When Nerds Attack, you know. How to not be skeevy.
Yes.
I'll credit you as a writer on that.
Absolutely, that's fine. Just say, by the way, here's a tip. Tip came in from Amber.
Unfortunately, I'm wrapping up my When Nerds Attack run at the end after San Diego this year. San Diego or New York this year, I haven't really decided which one. It's just, you know, I don't have that much time between my day job, my night job, and trying to write comics as well as trying to have a home life.
Sure. All right. Well, we look forward to When Nerds Attack. And your Twitter, of course, the other Mario C, so we will know when things are posted.
Yeah, I post random crap on there, so please do not be offended or weirded out. I wrote one today. What did I say? That chick must have the Hermé of herpes. I don't know why I wrote that. I just, you know, I was thinking of something.
But it's okay to call you out on that and say, dude, are you being a douche right now?
Yeah, okay. I will take that. No, sometimes I test out material for my stand-up, you know, like little taglines.
Okay.
And I'll just put it out there to see who bites.
All right. Well, and, you know, again, if you're performing in the area, then that'd be cool for locals to come out and see you.
Yes, please.
All right. So, everybody, you've been listening to Mario Candelaria. Hopefully I pronounced that right.
You did good.
All right. And you know, he's partnered up with a lot of people, but Carl Slominski, did I get it right?
I'm actually not too sure, but I want to say yes.
I think that's right. As a fellow Polish person, I should have that right. So Carl's also on the Twitters. So look them up. Look up Ashes, because I think it'll be a really intriguing, compelling comic. You know, hopefully we'll catch you around at one of these conventions.
Yes, definitely. Look me up. I'm always up for having a drink with someone at the bar. So.
Fantastic. And you guys can, of course, follow me at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter and at amberunmasked.com. And, you know, cheers.